This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The summer movie everyone seems to be waiting for is David Lynch's Wild at Heart. My guest Nicolas Cage is the star. Cage starred opposite Cher in Moonstruck, and Kathleen Turner in Peggy Sue Got Married. He played an ex-con who kidnaps a baby to keep his marriage together in Raising Arizona. He's a Vietnam veteran in Birdie, and a literary agent who's convinced he's turning into Nosferatu in Vampire's Kiss. Cage also appeared in The Cotton Club and Rumblefish. Although Nicolas Cage often plays ex-cons and working-class characters, his real background is quite different. His father is the Dean of Creative Arts at San Francisco State University, and his uncle is film director Francis Ford Coppola. In Wild at Heart, Cage plays Sailor, an ex-con obsessively in love with Lula, who's played by Laura Dern. They're traveling through the South to get away from her crazy mother, who's forbidden their relationship.
Basically, the relationship is just a very intense thing of love. And everything that Sailor does is because of Lula. And he'll do anything for her. He'll beg, he'll steal, he would even kill. And so in that sense, he's kind of a radical character, but because of the idea that it's motivated from his love for her, there is something a little sympathetic about it.
This is not the first time you've played an ex-con. Did that have anything to do with David Lynch wanting you for the movie?
Oh, I don't know. I know that he likes Raising Arizona and he likes the Coen brothers. I don't know if that had anything to do with it, though. I ran into David a couple of times. Once I ran into him at Thrifty Drug and Discount Store, and I was looking for some cold medication for my girlfriend at the time, and he said hello, and then I ran into him at an old restaurant here in Hollywood called Musso and Frank's Bar and Grill, and he said, "Nick," and I turned around, and there was David Lynch, and I thought he was Jimmy Stewart, and he looks a hell of a lot like Jimmy Stewart, and after that, you know, I heard about the book Wild at Heart, and that he wanted me to read it, and we talked about possibly making it into a movie, and it all came together.
Lynch's movies, like Blue Velvet, for instance, have a real dream quality to them. They're not exactly realistic. I assume there's that kind of dream quality in Wild at Heart. And if so, what kind of opportunity does that give you as an actor to do things that are beyond realism?
Well, you know, I think that the dream state is a wonderful playground, and it gives an actor license to do just about anything, which is a hell of a lot of fun for me, because I was starting to feel kind of stagnated and kind of just locked into this whole naturalism thing. And I started looking for scripts such as Vampire's Kiss, which a lot of it happens in the hallucinatory state or the psychotic dream state, and Peggy Sue Got Married, which also was sort of a dream state, if you will, from Kathleen Turner's point of view. And then David, who has this very specific world that he creates, is almost always in that kind of higher reality, if you will, kind of dream state. So it's a very liberating thing to be able to work in that kind of a format. The problem with it, though, is that there are very few movies which allow for that kind of behavior, to basically let go and try new things. So, you know, you have to sort of go back to your roots or naturalism, if you will.
Can you give us a sense of some of the more adventurous things that you tried in your role as Sailor?
Well, you know, the biggest adventure for me was that I had to sing. And I'm not a singer. And I only sang once before, and that was in Peggy Sue Got Married. And the character wasn't supposed to sing very well, so I wasn't too nervous about it. But David is a huge lover of music, and he wanted me to sing two Elvis songs. And at best, my singing sounds like a barking dog. So I was pretty nervous, and I think that was a little bit of an adventure right there, to be able to pull that together with him.
One of the songs is "Love Me Tender," right?
Right. So and the other one is "Love Me."
So how do you do it? Are you supposed to be impersonating Elvis, or?
Well, the thing about Sailor is he does sort of have this adopted Elvis essence to him, and I David really wanted that to come through with the character. It's kind of a chancy thing, you know, because people might look at it and say, oh, that's a caricature of Elvis Presley, but actually it's more of a tone thing, if you will, you know, kind of a just an idea, a mood, and so I went ahead and sort of adopted some of Elvis Presley's mannerisms and vocal intonations.
Which mannerisms did you pick up on?
Well, you know, kind of like all that, how you doing, baby? Keep them white panties on.
Did you go back and watch early Elvis movies?
Yeah, I watched a lot of the This Is Elvis movie, which had some excellent clips of just the way he was when he was hanging out alone and talking, and I watched some of the beach blanket bingo type movies that he made, and the guy was really a fascinating personality, so I had a lot of fun borrowing from him.
Blue Velvet, for instance, had some very disturbing images in it, and I've been hearing from people who've screened Wild at Heart that there's some very disturbing images in it. I'm wondering what those images are, and if you are aware of that when you're in it, or if you actually have to see the film back to understand visually what's happening in it.
Well, you know, that's a good question, because during the whole making of the movie, David's process with the actors, with everybody, the set people and the designers, is very positive and up and fun spirited. So here's a bunch of people having a hell of a good time working together, and then you see the movie and there's some moments that are truly terrifying. And I wonder how those moments were spawned out of such kind of a jolly time.
What's one of those moments?
Well, there's a moment in the movie where Harry Dean Stanton gets his head blown off. That is, it just smells like black magic and ritual, and it's pretty scary.
Nicolas Cage is my guest, and he's starring in David Lynch's new movie, Wild at Heart, which opens August 17th. Is it a true story that when you were doing the film Birdie, and this was in the early part of the 1980s, that you pulled two teeth as part of your getting into the role?
Well, actually what happened was I had baby teeth up until I was 22, and they wouldn't come out, so by coincidence, simultaneously, I had to pull the teeth out while I was making Birdie so that the other teeth would come in because they were getting impacted. And I guess people just thought it was some example of wacko method, you know, masochism, which it really wasn't.
Nevertheless, did it help you in the role to experience so much pain?
Because well,
I think
yeah,
that's what
actually,
people assumed it was
figured,
for, yeah.
I figured as long as it's here, might as well use it, you know.
So how did you use it? What does that mean?
Well, if you're experiencing dental pain while you're doing a scene where your face has been blown off, just basically you don't have to act. Just use the dental pain.
Can you tell when you watch the movie back that you were experiencing real pain?
Yeah. Yeah, I can. I don't actually like to watch that movie, to tell you the truth.
Because you don't like the movie?
No, I like the movie. It's just that It was like it was a little private, you know. I let so much stuff come out, and I get a little embarrassed when I see it, just because it's just so bare.
Have you ever gone to real extremes, the equivalent of pulling teeth, to get into a role?
Yeah, I mean, I had to learn while I was working, and learn publicly through trial and error, and sometimes I fell on my face, and sometimes it worked, but I started at a pretty early age. I started when I was 17, and I really didn't have that much training. So I basically just did all the things that I'd heard the other great actors had done, like staying up all night to do a scene the next day to look tired, or really doing the method thing. And on Cotton Club, I was playing a pretty crazy gangster who was very feared in Harlem. And I would walk down the street in New York, and you know, smash people's remote control cars and have everything scatter and, you know, really believe I was this psychotic killer. And by the time I was about to do the scene the next day, I brought all that stuff to the scene and it worked. But, you know, needless to say, I wasn't liked very much. And I mean, I do have a life and I don't really want to live the part anymore. So I stopped doing that and I realized I could get there without all that intense living the role kind of thing.
So what did you do? You smashed remote control cars?
Well, I went down Christopher Street and there was a guy selling remote control cars for $50 and I said, let me see that. And I put it in the middle of the street and I jumped on and smashed it and all the pieces were flying around. All the people just scattered and saying, oh, you're crazy and all this. And I did give the guy $50 for it, but it just sort of helped me believe that I could create fear in people, which is what what that character did in the movie.
You had no confidence that you were really capable of generating fear in somebody before that?
Well, it felt like I was able to, you know. I'm really not a violent guy. I'm not a fighter. I'm not into that. But when I was playing that role, at least at that point, I was young and I was just experimenting with trying to evoke that so that I could believe it in myself or the character. I've learned that it's just not necessary, and it's actually a lot more creative and thoughtful to just, you know, act the role a little bit sometimes.
Have you ever tried something pretty outrageous in a role and had a director object to it and say that's too far out?
Yeah. I was doing Racing with the Moon, and I've always had this idea of breaking the fourth wall, which is like taking it into hyper-realism, which is what I did in Vampire's Kiss, actually, when I ate the cockroach. I wanted people to know that it was really happening and to get into that and create that sort of visceral aura. And, in Racing with the Moon, I took a pocket knife out and I basically cut my arm open and wanted the blood to go and flow on film and have people know it was a very realistic moment. And Richard Benjamin basically said, wrong movie, Nick. Let's cool out a little.
So did he want to use fake blood, or did he not like that whole idea of self-mutilation anyways?
He just didn't like the idea at all. It wasn't even in the script.
I just wanted to do this one thing,
you know, and try to do something hyper-real. I was experimenting with a lot of different things back then, and I'm glad I did it and went through it, but I do feel like now it's a little bit easier for me to arrive at what is needed in the scene emotionally or in terms of character without doing that intense, self-destructive kind of acting.
Let's talk a little bit about Vampire's Kiss. This is the movie that you referred to before, that you ate the cockroach in. This is a wonderful film. You play a character who is a very obnoxious literary agent, and he thinks he's turning into a vampire because he's gone to bed with someone who he believes bit him, you know, a vampire, a female vampire who he believes bit him. And he starts, you know, shrinking at the sign of the cross and asking people to put a stake through his heart to take him out of his misery. It's an incredibly original performance that you give. It just seemed to me like you must have watched all the new and old horror films to get the classic vampire gestures for the movie.
Well, you know, that's true, actually. I was exposed to the movie Nosferatu at a very early age because my father was, teaching film. And the original Nosferatu, starring Max Schreck, the black and white silent vampire movie, gave me nightmares for years. And those images, especially his body language and his gestures and movements, stayed with me, and I always thought it'd be great to be able to incorporate that kind of silent film acting where they were using their bodies more because they had to compensate for the lack of sound and try to bring it into modern film. And with Vampire's Kiss, I saw an opportunity to do that, kind of explore that German expressionist style of acting that those guys were doing back then, like in Cabinet of Dr. Caligari and even Emil Jannings. And the only way I could pull it off, I figured, was if the character was insane, because you can't really act like that in modern film in a normal format, because people just wouldn't understand or get it or relate to it or want to relate to it. But if the character is insane, and especially if he thinks he's turning into a vampire, there's just a wonderful landscape of things you can do. And so I brought those old style gestures to the character because of his insanity, basically.
Well, one example of the kind of really large gesture that you're talking about is a widening of the eyes. I mean, your eyes get huge in one of the scenes. Did you know you had the capacity to do that with your face?
Well, I experimented in front of a mirror. You know, see, that was what Max Schreck was doing in Nosferatu. His eyes were really wide, and he was just spooky, and I figured it would be kind of cool in one scene to try to freak the secretary, Alva, played by Maria Conchita Alonso, freak her out instead of yelling at her, which was originally what the script called for, just totally yelling at her. There was so much yelling in the movie anyway that I thought it might be more intense to try to use my eyes to freak her out and intimidate her. And I just wanted the eyes to keep getting bigger. And Robert Bierman, the director, staged the camera angle so that the camera would move in slowly into my face as my eyes were getting slowly, progressively bigger and bigger and weirder and spookier. So it was, I was pretty happy with that. It was kind of a cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get to the cockroach eating sequence.
There's
a scene where you're in your kitchen, and this is after you've decided you're turning into a vampire, and there's a cockroach crawling across the burner of the stove, and you scoop it up in your hand and eat it. Now, we don't see you swallow it in the movie, but we do see you chewing on it, and there's no edit, so it's definitely the real thing that's gone in your mouth, I think.
Definitely the real thing. Originally, they wanted me to eat raw eggs, and that didn't do anything for me.
Sylvester Stallone had already done that.
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted to tie in the Renfield thing, you know, Renfield from the Dracula novel where he was eating the bugs and stuff. And
Renfield's always the assistant who's in the insane asylum eating insects.
Right, he's the assistant to Dracula. And it was a slow progression for Peter Lowe. I mean, first he's eating pistachios, then he's eating a cockroach, then he finally eats the dove and ultimately bites a girl's neck and kills her and drinks her blood. So it was like this progressive building from pistachio to girl. And the cockroach was one of the steps in the disintegration of Peter Lowe. So I said, you know, I want to try eating a cockroach. And everybody was like, you've got to be crazy. And I said, yeah, I know what you mean. I really don't like cockroaches myself. And they wrangled up three New York cockroaches out of somebody's basement. And the day arrived where I had to do it, and I saw the bug when I walked on the set, and the legs were kicking and the antennas were going, and it looked huge. And I almost said, guys, I can't do it. And I figured that would be a cop-out because, you know, I'd set it up and made them wrangle for cockroaches for weeks. I put the cockroach close to me, and every muscle in my body was just saying, don't do it. And the wings were going, and then I did it, and I couldn't sleep for about 3 days, and I couldn't eat, but, well, I did it, and there it is. You know what I mean?
Did you call a doctor first and ask if chewing a cockroach could kill you?
No. Yeah, they said it would be okay. What I did was I rinsed my mouth out with 100-proof vodka, and sterilized my mouth before I did it, and then when I spat the cockroach out, I sterilized it again.
What did it taste like?
Oh, you know, I couldn't remember. All I know is it was soft. It was not crunchy. It was soft, and it was just a nightmare.
Does it ever come back and haunt you?
Well, when I talk about it like this and I start thinking about it, I get goosebumps. I mean, I'm starting to get the willies again.
Huh. No, but don't you collect exotic insects and animals?
Well, I like exotic fish. I like anything to do with the ocean. And I'm not really a bug fan. I mean, I have a 4-foot perfect, highly detailed model of a wasp in my living room that I stare at on occasion. But I don't really have a huge bug collection, no.
Okay. Nicolas Cage is my guest. Several of your early films were directed by Francis Ford Coppola, who's actually your uncle. Rumblefish, Peggy Sue Got Married, and Cotton Club. You're a Coppola, but you changed your name to Cage. When did you change it, and why did you do it?
Well, when I first started working, I made a couple of TV shows, and I went in to read the other actors for Rumblefish. And by my surprise, they said, well, we'd like you to be in the movie. And, you know, then I was still Nicolas Coppola, and I felt a lot of pressure from the other actors, you know, Mickey and Matt, and basically them thinking I didn't have the goods because I was just a case of nepotism. And it kind of made me a little stiff, you know. I felt a lot of that pressure. So when I changed my name, I felt like I was brand new. I went in to read for a movie called Valley Girl, and it was the first time that I'd auditioned for a movie where the casting lady wasn't talking for a half an hour about the movies that my uncle had made and totally taking my mind off the scene that I had prepared for 2 days, you know? So it really helped me out to change the name, and it took the pressure off of me, and I felt a lot freer.
Why did you choose Cage as your last name?
Well, there's a long time ago, I used to read a lot of comic books, and there was a superhero, and his name was Luke Cage, Power Man. And I just thought it was a cool-sounding name, and then I was listening to John Cage's music, which I found very stimulating, and I just decided to use it. There were a couple other names that I was going to go for, but it just sounded right to me. It was just sort of simple and to the point.
Would you ever change your name back again to Coppola?
You know, I've actually thought about that, but I don't think so. I'm feeling like Nicolas Coppola is a thing of the past, and I'm really comfortable with Cage. So, and that's the way it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. I've read a tattoo of a lizard on your back.
Right.
I mean, when you see your back looking in a two-way mirror or something, doesn't it give you the creeps?
No, I that's part of the reason why I put it on my back. I really don't see it that often.
Well, why did you put it there?
Well, it was Halloween 1984, and I broke up with my girlfriend. I was just feeling like I had to do something radical. And when I look back on it, I was 20 years old at the time, and I guess I was getting ready to become a man, and it was like my way of saying, I'm my own person, and I'm breaking free of the family, and I was the first one in the family to get a tattoo, so I guess in retrospect, it was kind of a walkabout, if you will, or a bar mitzvah.
How did you show it to your family?
Well, I remember I just said, Dad, I got a tattoo, and I lifted up my shirt, and he saw it, and his face went white, and he had himself a martini, and that was that.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
My guest has been Nicolas Cage, and he stars in David Lynch's new movie, Wild at Heart, which opens on August 17th. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.